Coming to you live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios. The Prep Sports Report, presented by Alpha. Here are your hosts, Coach Rick Cleveland, Coach Mark Lasseter, and Corey LeBounty.
Good morning and welcome to the Prep Sports Report presented by Alpha and coming to you live from the Eastern Shore Toyota and Hyundai Studios located right here in the heart of Mobile, Alabama. And welcome to Radio Alabama, covering all of Talladega County and the lake. Beautiful Lake Martin, Montgomery, Auburn, Opelika, Alexander City, all over that river region there in Montgomery. Good morning, Corey LeBounty.
Good morning, Coach. Always a pleasure to join you 52 weeks out of the year here on the Prep Sports Report, and there's plenty for us to discuss and banter about this rainy Saturday morning.
Well, there's no doubt about that. It's kind of a rainy, muggy, muddy Saturday morning, as Twinks Green used to say in Sylacauga on every afternoon show, but we certainly do have a whole lot of stuff to talk about this morning, and going to visit with Josh Bean of AL.com, and then we're going to visit with one of your buddies that's now working with Sports Illustrated, talk about recruiting and some of the hits and misses that many of the universities had this past week. But I can tell you, there's probably a lot of people out there wanting to talk some basketball, and we're certainly going to talk basketball. I know there's a huge tournament coming up over Christmas holiday, and we'll let you go all over that one, Corey.
Without question. I mean, it's a time to where officially last week you and I had an opportunity to go to Hattiesburg and call the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star Game 1 week ago. Was impressed. Unfortunately, Alabama lost 17-16 in overtime to the Mississippi All-Stars, but we saw a tremendous amount of talent that we'll be talking about here the next 3 and 4 years. And Mississippi had its fair share of talent. I think the most talented player in the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star game was on the Mississippi roster, McKinley Jackson. And we'll talk to John Garcia Jr. about this young man as well. And also, Team Alabama, the Alabama All-Stars, had an opportunity to win the game, went up 10-0, and I thought that Alabama was going to go ahead and tuck Mississippi in, but a blocked extra point in overtime led to the loss. But it was a wonderful game to watch and experience, and I know the high school guys, to end their high school career being considered an all-star was a wonderful thing for them to take part in. And Demoy Kennedy, the young man from Theodore High School, he was very active. Also, E.J. Williams, he's a wide receiver from Central of Phoenix City. He got the most valuable player for the Alabama All-Stars. He'll be attending Clemson, so the rich get richer. Justin Ross, he's going to follow his teammate who went up to Clemson and was a huge difference maker a year ago for the national champion Clemson Tigers. He'll be attending Clemson and playing for Dabo, and he caught pretty much everything that was thrown him. Sawyer Pate had a good game trying to finish up his senior career in regards to recruiting, like you talked about during our broadcast. Put things on tape against Mississippi's best that continues to help his stock.
You know, Corey, in doing that game, and I certainly enjoyed doing that game with you, it was interesting to note the competitiveness that was on both of these teams. Because most of the time when you see an all-star game, you see kind of kids trying to be highlighted and coaches trying to spotlight players. This game was all about who's going to win the game. I mean, we saw an outstanding tight end from Real Town who I thought, man, it's just an impressive player. Played more defense than he did offense, and he was outstanding on defense. His name escapes me. Of course it does right now. But at the same time, boy, both of these coaching staffs were, I mean, it was hugely important that they win the game. And I can tell you this, I know from the Alabama point of view, it was important that Alabama win that game. And it was really, after talking to some of the guys after the game, it was a dejected feeling walking off of the stadium, off that field at Southern Miss last Saturday. So I was really, really impressed with everything that was done during that game. You know, there's a couple of things that you know, around the state of Alabama, I want to ask Josh Beam about. Bo Culver was the head football coach at Deschler when UMS Wright played them last year for the state in for the 4A state championship. A tremendous young football coach. This year, he took the job in early June at Hartsell, replacing a friend of ours, Bob Godsey. Bob, of course, left and went to Madison Academy, where he's trying to just revamp that entire program. And for some reason, Bo Culver, they went 4-7. I think they lost their first five games of the year, came back, made the playoffs. But I don't see Bo Culver resigning. I just don't see it. I wonder what happened up there to create a situation after 1 year where a really good young coach, and I say this kind of in quotes, I guess was forced out at Hartsell after 1 year.
You know, I have a relative who does work at Hartsell High School and actually works side by side with Coach Culver. And it was a situation to where you've encountered this at times. He was hired by this principal, and it just, their philosophies, once he got on campus and along with the community, did not mesh and mix. And again, after 1 year, sometimes you get a better feel and a regret from an administration standpoint about who you hired. And it is a year-to-year basis. But to me, for him to try to turn around the culture that he wanted to change, to bring in his style of football, it was going to take a lot longer than 1 year to do so. And the record did not reflect how much work he personally put in and the sacrifices that him and his assistant coaches made by moving to Hartsell from Deschler. So that's unfortunate, because all those coaches have kids in the school system, and you never like to see you be in three places in 3 years, especially during that young journey in his kid's life. But I know Coach Culver, being a man of faith, it just didn't work out for him with the administration and the community in Hartsell, and that was an internal issue. It had nothing to do with wins and losses.
Well, when you look at that, there wasn't anything wrong with the culture at Hartsell. And I think as coaches, when we go into a situation like he went into, you know, he may need to change the way he likes to do things and kind of mainstream with the way they'd been doing things at Hartsell, because it had been pretty doggone good under Bob Godsey, a really great high school program. And to dip to 4-7, regardless of whether it played a part in his dismissal, that was a change in their culture, because they certainly weren't used to 4-7s at Hartsell. And that goes all the way back to Coach Woods, and then when Bob Godsey took over. It's a really great place to be, a great community, and a really great high school job. And it bothers me, because Bo Culver is a young coach. He got the opportunity to be in a great situation, and for whatever reason, it didn't work out. So there's always lessons to be learned. And Rick Neuheisel is a guy that I have a great deal of respect for, and he's on one of the radio shows that I like to listen to. And, you know, he says oftentimes, the only way you learn to be a head coach is to be a head coach and fail.
I agree with you. And it's a situation to where not only in Hartsell High School, you're looking at the changes here locally with Alberta High School making the huge jump in classification to 5A. Now their new principal, Brant Bailey, has promoted internally defensive coordinator Lanny Jones to that head coaching position. So congratulations to Lanny Jones by being the new leader at Alberta. He'll have an opportunity to kind of make and punch his stamp as Alberta makes that transition over to 5A football.
You know, and talking about, as we talk about coaches, in the Talladega County area, coming directly from Radio AlabamaSports.net, Michael Brandon reported on Thursday that Childersburg head football coach, I think Coach Beverly, has resigned at Childersburg. And, you know, there's another situation where Childersburg is just a neat little community, but when Childersburg lost the factories out there on the river, the Coosa River, and that town has really struggled economically, and they got some great, some of my favorite people in the world live in Childersburg. But at the same time, boy, they've had a tough time keeping football coaches there. And we're going to keep an eye on what's going on in Childersburg and see what happens there. Still concerned about what's going on in Sylacauga. Don't know what's going to happen there. Don't hear a whole lot, but what I do hear is there may be, you know, head coach may be thinking about some other things. I hope he's not. I hope we can keep our head coach at Sylacauga High School. You're listening to PSR, Prep Sports Report, and Radio Alabama. When we come back, Josh Bean of AL.com is going to visit with us. We're going to talk about some of the reclassifications that might have affected your teams throughout your area.
It's almost time for the big game. All your friends are coming over to watch, but, oh, you forgot to get food for the party. Don't worry, head over to Janino's Pizza. There are two locations to better serve you, in Gulf Shores and Daphne. Call ahead for pickup or eat inside, where there are plenty of big screen TVs to watch the big game. Janino's Pizza in Daphne and Gulf Shores. Visit janinospizza.com for the call-in number, menu, and location. That's JANINOSpizza.com. Janino's Pizza.
With Alpha Insurance, you don't have to deal with someone halfway around the world. Our hometown agents and adjusters live in the communities we serve, so you can count on us to be there when you need us. Call Alpha and let us help you save on home, car, and life insurance. In Mobile, call Alpha agent Beth Burrows at 343-4540 or stop by our office at 4715 Airport Boulevard, Suite 320 in Mobile.
Do you need a part for your car or truck? Auto World has over 13 acres of foreign and domestic vehicles with a wide variety of new and used parts. With over 40,000 parts on site and a nationwide database, we can get any part you need. All parts are inspected, cleaned, and backed by a 90-day warranty. Call or come by right now. Auto World. World-class parts, world-class service. 1-800-333-3909.
Encore is dedicated to providing comprehensive rehabilitation to over 100 locations across Alabama and Mississippi. Encore is also committed to giving back to the community. Encore is a national sponsor of the Distinguished Young Women Scholarship Program. Encore is also a corporate sponsor of the Alabama High School Athletic Association, providing athletic training coverage for every Boys and Girls State Championship. Encore cares about your health and your community. For a convenient location near you, call 947-3410. 947-3410.
Searching for the perfect gumbo, the tastiest shrimp, fried to perfection fish? Look no further than Craver's Seafood Restaurant. With two locations in Daphne and Mobile, our family serves the freshest quality seafood at great prices in a casual, fun atmosphere. We love to grill, steam, and blacken too. So don't forget to come to see our famously friendly staff for any occasion. Craver's Seafood Restaurant, a taste from the bayou.
You like to have options, right? Like where to eat lunch, what to wear to the game, and sweet tea versus unsweet tea. At Century Bank, we think you also deserve options when it comes to your checking account. That's why we offer multiple accounts, like Century Free Checking. That's free for everyone. Or the Kasasa Checking, the account that rewards you on purchases you normally make, like a new outfit for the big game or sweet tea. Visit Century Bank today and see which option is best for you. Member FDIC. Qualifications and rules may apply.
Hi, folks. We all know about Dreamland. The ribs, the sauce, the pork, the chicken. Well, I could go on and on. But did you know that Dreamland ships to anywhere in the United States? That's right. Go to DreamlandBBQ.com to place an order. Just a couple of clicks and Dreamland is headed your way. This is a great way to send a friend a unique gift for holidays or birthdays. Go to DreamlandBBQ.com and send them some ribs or sauce. Dreamland ain't nothing like them nowhere.
The CNC Financial and Auto Sales communication lines are open at 251-343-0106. This segment of the Prep Sports Report, presented by Green & Phillips Attorneys at Law. Now, back to the show.
I seen your picture. Your name in lights above it. This is your big debut.
All right, welcome back to PSR. I made a huge mistake. Huge mistake. Did not get in touch with Dalt. First time in 17 years we hadn't had Christmas music. Dalt, I am so sorry. That is my fault.
That's on me, too.
Oh, man.
I'll work on it right now.
I just forgot. I mean, I've been so caught up in so many other things, but this is Christmas season. It is the Wow. It's a celebration of the birth of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And why in the world? I usually have that in my notes to let you know the 1st of December, and I apologize for that. Please bear with us. I promise you we'll get some of that stuff on that we enjoy and love. And one of the guys that we really enjoy having on with us is Josh Bean from Alabama.com, who does a great job really covering all of high school sports with a passion. He and Ben Thomas are just the best. All you got to do is go out of state and you read other high school sports coverage. These guys hit a home run. They knock it out of the park every single day. We so much appreciate everything that we do. And we want to talk to Josh this morning about reclassification. Certainly here in the Metro Mobile area and across South Alabama, there's a lot of talk about McGill dropping from 7A to 6A, from Daphne jumping up from 6A to 7A. Will Daphne and Spanish Fork continue to play? How will that affect McGill Tulane in other sports like volleyball, things like that? So we got Josh on, and Josh will be the answer for all of our questions this morning. Josh, good morning and Merry Christmas, pal.
Hey, good morning to you. Thanks for having me.
Josh, this is a situation to where here, Coastal Alabama-wise, I was kind of shocked that McGill Tulane moved down to 6A. I mean, there have been some rumbling and talking about it because St. Michael's, another Catholic school, opens over in the Baldwin County area. Daphne once was a powerhouse 6A school. Of course, the 7th classification comes out. Now they're having an opportunity to move back into that 7A area. But here along the coast, you have an opportunity to cover this area for a tremendous amount of time and being very familiar with it. What kind of surprises were there when the reclassification came out?
Well, clearly, as you mentioned, McGill moving down was a big surprise. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I wondered how much St. Michael had affected their enrollment, and clearly it did. I mean, we sort of anecdotally knew that, right? I mean, you guys lived in Mobile for a long time, and you know, you hear these stories about kids driving across the bay from Robertsdale or Fairhope or wherever they were in Baldwin County to come to McGill. Once St. Michael opened, that was not necessary anymore. But it was still a surprise to see them move down. Now, in volleyball, they'll stay up. They had enough points, according to competitive balance, to stay in 7A. And we'll see if some of McGill's other sports are required to stay in 7A. But football-wise, they didn't have enough points, so they moved down. You know, that was a surprise. I mean, not in Mobile, but I thought Albertville moving up to 7A was a bigger surprise than Daphne moving up. But, you know, I mean, it really wasn't that long ago. I mean, the last time Daphne won a state championship when T.J. Yeldon was a junior, you know, that school was like, they were in the 50s, according to enrollment. You know, they're like the 52nd largest school or 53rd largest school, something like that. And so for them to get in that top 32 tells you that that's a school where the enrollment has gone up pretty significantly, pretty quickly. So, yeah, I think those were two surprises. I mean, we all knew UMS football was going to get moved up by competitive balance, but all of UMS's sports got moved up by enrollment. So everybody moves up one class for UMS. I don't know if that was really a surprise, but I did think that it was interesting.
You know, Josh, when you look over in Southeast Alabama and you look at the consolidation of Dothan and Northview, I think that's going to be one of the really one of the stories in the next 5 years is how competitive the new Dothan High School is going to be in 7A. You know, and having coached there and knowing that community as well as I know it. You know, Josh, that could be a premier program in this state because there are some tremendous athletes in the Circle City. And Smitty Grider obviously did a great job there this first year. But I really think that's going to be something that's going to be something we need to watch because, you know, there are just a boatload of good athletes in that area.
It is going to be fascinating to see how that works out. I mean, we're I don't know, 10 or 12 years down the road from similar consolidations happening in Florence and Gadsden. You know, Florence had Coffee and Bradshaw and consolidated into one Florence High School. Gadsden consolidated three high schools, including Emma Sampson, who had been a powerhouse for a long time, into one. And it has sort of been mixed results. I mean, Gadsden State has really struggled. They've been through this revolving door of coaches, which has not helped their stability. Florence, on the other hand, has found more success, particularly in football. But you're right. I mean, it'll be interesting to see how that works with Dothan. I think as this first season went along, they played better. They got in the playoffs. Last year they were in 6A. I think they took Spanish Fort to overtime in the playoffs. So that was a program that showed a lot of growth this first year. Moving up to 7A might make it a little bit harder, but it will be fascinating to see what happens there.
Josh, one of the biggest things, though, when they did this reclassification, for the first time, enrollment was based on grades 9 through 11 and not 10 through 12.
That's right.
A huge change in reclassification purposes.
It was. And, you know, it's interesting. This was something that has been discussed sort of quietly, I don't know, at least it seems like for the last 8 or 10 years. And you know, the folks who have been for it for a long time have said, look, if we classify with 9 through 11, those are really the kids that are going to be playing during the 2 years of this classification cycle. And it seems like that makes more sense than using seniors that won't be playing at all, right? This year's seniors, if we counted them, they're off there. They're gone to college, or they're working, or they're in the military. They're doing something totally different. So I understand why the change was made, but it was different. And there are some schools still that will have a much larger ninth grade class than they have by the time those kids get to be seniors. And so that did cause some changes. And I think that for a lot of schools, because this was the first time we used 9 through 11, there were a lot of schools that just they weren't sure where they were going to end up. I think, two that I can think of right offhand that we wondered about. Mortimer Jordan was a team that had a lot of 5A success. They got pushed up into 6A. The opposite was Pleasant Grove that just recently played in the 5A football championship game. They thought they might get pushed down to 4A, and they ended up as the smallest school in 5A. So it almost happened. So yeah, I think it was a difference. And for schools anticipating what's going to happen, because you guys know that everybody's trying to figure out where are we going to end up, I think that caused maybe more anxiety this time than I've seen in other recent reclass.
We're talking to Josh Bean, AL.com, and we're talking reclassification in the state of Alabama. And I thought one of the more interesting scenarios that took place with Chickasaw. Chickasaw moved up from 2A to 3A by enrollment, but I know David Walford, the superintendent there, had some concerns about that. See, Chickasaw created a virtual school for students in kindergarten through the ninth grade. I think it was this past summer. And that included 47 freshmen or ninth graders. So, you know, when we changed from 10 to 12 to 9 to 11, those 47 enrolled in the virtual school at Chickasaw pushed their enrollment to about, I think you wrote or someone wrote, to about 230 students, and
that moved
them to 3A. And without those 47 students, then Chickasaw would have stayed in 2A. So even though they denied Chickasaw's request, I still think that was an interesting scenario. We've only got about 30 seconds in this, but what did you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting. A very similar thing happened with Eufaula in the last reclass. And in Chickasaw's case, I think, you know, they created their virtual school before any of us knew that 9 through 11 was going to be what was counted.
Right.
So unfortunate for them, but, you know, I personally, I don't think there's a huge difference between 2A and 3A.
We're talking to Josh Bean. We're going to hold him over. Josh, if you'll sit tight, we still got a lot of things we want to talk about. And Merry Christmas to you, pal.
You too. Merry Christmas. Thanks for having me, Phil.
We'll be right back, and Josh will share some other things that you may or may not know.
Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. Santa Claus is coming to town. He's making a list and checking it. We'll be right back.
Barry's been chasing Rudolph for a lot of years, or he chased him for a lot of years. Love some Chuck Berry. All right. We're talking to Josh Bean of AL.com, talking reclassification, which we do every year. And, Josh, you know, I think one of the things that private schools, and, you know, 27 years in public school and 15 years in private school has allowed me to see the good, the bad, and the indifferent. So what do you think about multiplier versus competitive balance? I keep thinking, and for whatever reason, I think we're going, the multiplier will be gone by the next reclassification. I don't know that, but I think that. And what are your thoughts, and what do you hear on that?
Well, I think that the, personally, I think the multiplier is here to stay. I think that I don't see it going up. I think that competitive balance was created essentially as a compromise to keep the, to prevent the multiplier from going up, but to find a way to, you know, there are some schools that have a powerhouse program in one or more sports. And I think the idea of using competitive balance for teams instead of a school's complete athletic department, I think that was the intention of it. You know, I think that it seems to have worked reasonably well. And, you know, the truth is, at least in football, which we all know drives the bus for all of this, it really hasn't affected that many schools. The first time we used it, we had two schools that got pushed up in football, St. Paul's and Madison Academy. Neither of those teams won a state championship, but they were both very competitive. They both made the playoffs both years. So, I'm sure that there are folks who don't like either of those things for private schools, but to me, it seems like they're both here to stay.
So, is it fair? And that's a term that we, you know, has got a lot of definitions. But is it fair that only the private schools are faced with competitive balance and the public schools are not?
Yeah, I think that that's a fair criticism of the rule. I think that's probably been the biggest heartburn that the rule caused statewide, was that people felt like, oh, well, you know, UMS they win three state football championships and they're going to be forced to move up. But someone like Fife, for instance, that's made it to the Super 7 five of the last 6 years, well, they don't have to worry about that. Now, in Fife's case, they got pushed up to 3A by enrollment anyway. Right. And so, and this will be the first time Fife's ever been a 3A school in the school's history, but that's sort of beside the point. It's just an illustration of, yes, I think that's a fair criticism. I don't know. I really don't know if I think competitive balance is fair or not. I just know that it was created, at least in my view, largely to prevent the multiplier going up. And so we have these two different things that affect private schools that, in a lot of ways, does the same thing.
Josh, I'm going to jump back down here to coastal Alabama and really look at 4A Region 1. I personally have a concern about Vigor attendance and zone continuing to shrink and drop, because you're a perennial 6A powerhouse, and I know that was 30 years ago that you won the national championship, and you have smaller schools such as Saraland and Chickasaw and Satsuma breaking off that messes your attendance zone up. But 4A Region 1 now consists of Escambia County, Jackson High School, Mobile Christian, W.S. Neal, St. Michael, Vigor, and Williamson. Talk to me about the dwindling enrollment, and were you shocked that Vigor now drops down to 4A?
I was surprised that that Vigor moved down, but you mentioned the forces that are at play there, right? You know, Vigor was a school that drew kids from Chickasaw, that drew some kids out in that, and honestly, I don't know if Saraland, if the city has done some annexation, but kids in that Satsuma, Saraland, Chickasaw area for a long time historically went to Vigor, or they might have chosen to go to Vigor. And so, yeah, I mean, based on those factors, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised as I was. But, schools go through changes, and this is definitely a school that enrollment-wise has gone down. Now, You know, we'll see what that does. You know, they'll be in that region with Jackson, a team that they played a bunch in recent years. You know, Jackson was a 4A school and then became a 5A school and began playing, you know, creating some rivalries with those other schools. So, you know, you look at that region and at first blush you think, wow, the favorite there might be Vigor just based on history alone.
Not only that, now I'm going to jump to 5A Region 1 here locally. BC Rain, Alberta, Faith Academy, LaFleur, Satsuma, St. Paul's, and UMS. And I think that Alberta probably feels the worst, not only just now naming a new head coach, but just being stuck in 5A Region 1, coming all the way up from 2A.
Yeah, you know, Alberta and Pike Road, I think, were the two schools statewide that moved up two classes or more. Now, in the initial classification for Alberta, you know, it was a new school, so they didn't have students in all classes. But, yeah, that's a big jump. I mean, as I said right before the break, I don't think there's a huge difference between 2A and 3A, but I do think there's a significant difference between 2A and 5A. So that'll be a big jump from Alberta. We'll see if Faith Academy can continue the success they've had the last 2 years under Jack French. I mean, you guys know every place he's been, he's really raised the program. He did it the short time he was at Baldwin County. He certainly did a fantastic job when he was at Baker, leading that program to respectability. Faith has now had its two best seasons since joining the HSAA the last couple of years, so that'll be interesting. And in that region, look, we all know The teams that are driving that are going to be UMS and St. Paul's. You know, St. Paul's gets to move down from 6A. UMS moves up from 4A. Those two teams are playing every year anyway, the Battle of Old Shell Road. But being in the region, in the same region, should intensify that rivalry. But already, you know, you guys know that already a very intense rivalry, but it could intensify it a little bit more too.
6A Region 1, to me, besides the Thompson-Hoover region, is the toughest region in the state of Alabama, as indicative of Spanish Fort being a 4 seed, making it to the state championship game. Now you throw McGill-Tulane in the mix. You have Spanish Fort, Saraland, Robertsdale, McGill, Blount, Gulf Shores, Centernelle, and Baldwin County in 6A Region 1.
Yeah, I mean, you look at that region, and I think all of us, you know, if we had to put $100 on the four teams to make the playoffs next year, I think virtually everybody would pick McGill, Saraland, Spanish Fort, and Blount. It seems there's a pretty strong line of demarcation between the four best and the rest in that region. But it is a really tough region. Baldwin County's a program that's made some big strides the last few years since Nate's been there. And, you know, you're right that it's tough. Even the teams that struggle, you know, even teams like Robertsdale, you know, you watch them run out of the tunnel and they look like a team. They look like a playoff team. And so there aren't really any gimmies there, but those, you know, adding McGill to the mix will be really interesting. You know, you trade Daphne for McGill. You know, you can look at that as a wash, but it certainly didn't get any easier for anybody when you know you're going to have to play McGill every year now.
You know, I think the other sports too, and that's something that we need to talk just a little bit about. When you talk about some other sports that it affects, like in swimming, and that's something we don't spend a whole lot of talking about, but like St. Michael's. St. Michael's moves from 1A, 5A, to 6A, 7A in swimming. And, you know, we all wondered what St. Michael's, how it was going to affect McGill. Well, we're seeing probably, 200 students now, the difference in McGill's numbers, which moved them down to 6A. But in some of these others, like in cross country as well, Bayside Academy moves from 3A to 4A, UMS moves from 4A to 5A, St. Paul's moves from 6A to 7A. That's going to have and what you do in cross country, Josh, is you get as many people to be out there so you can score more points. And so it's going to make it really competitive in those sports.
It will, and you know, we saw this a couple of years, in the last reclass. You know, you referenced swimming. Westminster Christian,
right,
and Huntsville got pushed up from 1A, 5A into the 6A, 7A. And then I know they won a championship this year. I think they may have won one last year too. So, you know, in some sports, I think track, cross country, swimming, the effect of moving up is a little bit less because you're really racing against the clock in those sports, right?
Right?
I mean,
yeah.
Certainly in swimming, it's magnified more than anything. You're racing the clock. Now there's other people in the pool with you, obviously, but you're racing the clock. So I think that minimizes a little bit. You know, certainly we talk about the impact of competitive balance in football in particular because it's such a physical game. And you know, if you get pushed up a class or two, you know, you run out there with 35 people on your sideline and the other team is dressing 60 or 70. That disparity can you know, might become a safety problem. But in those other sports, I don't really think it's a safety problem. But it does amplify and magnify the difficulty of continuing that success. I mean, you know, I don't think any of us think St. Paul's cross country or track is going to suddenly, the bottom's going to fall out of them competitively. But they might not run away with as many races as they have in the past.
Well, I can tell you, in the sport that I love and have passion for in tennis, we've had to move up to 6A, and it's made a drastic difference for us because they have so many more to choose from. And it's really tough for really a 4A school to compete against 6A schools when it comes to tennis, when you're looking for 6 to 8 players. They have a huge advantage.
You know that.
So, Josh, we will, if you don't mind, we'd love to hold you over for about 5 minutes in the next section and then let you go Christmas shopping. How about that?
Sounds good.
All right, pal. We'll be right back with more. Josh Bean, AL.com. Merry Christmas from all of us here at PSR.
Had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. Just hear those sleigh bells jingling, ring, ting, tingling too. Come on, it's lovely weather for a sleigh ride together with you. Outside the snow is falling and friends are calling you. Come on, it's lovely.
Merry, Merry Christmas from us here at PSR and Radio Alabama. And Merry Christmas to our buddies at WYAA and The Lake, Michael Brannon, Lee Perryman. Thank you for being and allowing us to be part of your team. And gosh, it's great to be home, especially around Christmas, and to hear Johnny Mathis. It doesn't get a whole lot better than that. Wow. All right, we're talking to Josh Bean, and we're talking reclassification, which comes up every 2 years. And, of course, we're on an odd schedule compared to Mississippi, Florida, and Georgia. So sometimes that creates some problems. But, you know, Josh, when you look at it, I think the one thing that all of us have really thought about is, of course, the UMS St. Paul's is now not just going to be a rivalry game, it's going to be a rivalry region game. And as you look throughout the state of Alabama, has that happened anywhere else? Having coached in a bunch of rivalry games, and this UMS St. Paul's game is probably right at the top of the list as far as competitiveness is concerned, both on the field and in the stands as well. But has that happened anywhere else? Do we see any more of these two-team entanglements where they were just rivalries, but now they're region rivals?
Yeah, you know, it's happened a couple of times. I mean, the one that really jumps to mind is the Battle of Murder Creek. You know, for a long time, it seems like W.S. Neal has kind of bounced back and forth from 3A to 4A. And so that annual game with T.R. Miller, you know, there's been times when it's been a region game. There's been times when it hasn't been a region game. And I do think when it's been a region game in that one, it did intensify the rivalry a little bit, you know, especially if that game ended up later in the year, right? I mean, the later in the year you get those victories, the meaning of them trying to get in the playoffs becomes amplified. So I think that's one. And then, you know, it's been several reclasses ago now, but there was at least one cycle where Hoover and Vestavia were in separate regions, and they maintained that rivalry and kept playing each other. But that one is, you know, that one's super intense. Now, you know, I think statewide we look at that one now and we don't think it's quite as strong as it once was, but that's mostly because of the way that Hoover has dominated that rivalry, particularly in the last 10 years or so. But I think those are two that we've seen them kind of bounce back and forth. And, you know, when they are in the same region, there is a little something extra there. And it'll be interesting to see how St. Paul's and UMS navigate that part of, you know, it'll be something new for that rivalry.
3A Region 1, Bayside Academy, Chickasaw, Cottage Hill Christian, XL, Flemington, Hillcrest of Evergreen, and T.R. Miller. That's a very competitive 3A Region 1 matchup that I look forward to watching. There's going to be some good teams left out in that region when it comes playoff time.
Yeah, you know, Mobile Christian moving up to 4A by competitive balance in football, you know, changes the landscape there a little bit. Flemington and T.R. Miller, you know, remaining in the same region. You know, Bruton and Flemington are only 50 miles apart, but, you know, for a long time, they didn't play based on the other rivalries that they had set up in the non-region schedule. Well, now they're in the same region. I think they were in the same region the last couple of years, so they play each other. So that one is interesting. You know, you mentioned Bayside. I mean, you know, Phil's done a fantastic job over the last decade or so since he's been there. So you always expect that team to be good. But yeah, I mean, I think Mobile Christian has sort of been the favorite in that region the last couple of years. Now that they're not there, I think it's more wide open than ever. And I think pretty much all of those teams, you can make a case that they can or should be in the playoffs next year. So that should be a fun race.
You know, Josh, the split up of the Gulf Shores system, the new Orange Beach High School is going to be a 2A team. And you look at that, and I think they, if I'm not mistaken, Greene County is in that same region. Now, that's in Utah, and Utah is about 200 miles from Orange Beach. That's going to be interesting there.
Of all the regions in this reclass, that's the one with the most travel. You know, and Orange Beach is about as far south as you can get in Alabama. Utah moved down a class, and there was, you know, geographically there wasn't an elegant fix to that one. You know, if Utah had been moved into another region, it caused this cascading effect across the state that caused, you know, more schools to have more travel. But yeah, I mean, look, Orange Beach, we knew that the new Orange Beach High School, they were going to have a ton of travel. There just aren't any small schools around them. You know, you get north of Mobile, and the closest small schools are places like Leroy and Washington County and Millery and places like that. I mean, you know, even when you go up Interstate 65, you know, you get to Atmore and Bruton and Hill and Evergreen. I mean, those places are a little bit bigger than what Orange Beach will begin at. So, yeah, that one, you know, if you're playing in that region, particularly if you're at Orange Beach or Greene County, you know, you don't expect those visiting teams to bring a big crowd because the travel is just so far.
I agree with you, Josh. And that's 2A Region 1. Here along the Gulf Coast, we do not have any 1A programs locally here along the Gulf Coast, because you just mentioned about what consists of 2A Region 1, JU Blackshear, Clark County, Greene County, Leroy, Orange Beach, St. Luke's, and Washington County. So that pretty much divvies up the entire state of Alabama. Going to jump to one more class, which is the largest classification in the state of Alabama. 7A Region 1 is now Alma Bryant, Baker, Daphne, Davidson, Fairhope, Foley, MGM, Murphy, and Theodore. Again, you mentioned the only change being the Daphne Trojans jumping in and McGill jumping out.
Yeah, and McGill has, of course, dominated this region. I think the last 5 years, McGill was 39-1 in region play. And McGill was the only one of those teams, I think, the last 4 years to win a playoff game. So this is it's an interesting group of teams. I mean, Theodore's a program that's had some success certainly lately, but not a ton of playoff success. I mean, Murphy is a program that historically, you know, we all expect that to be one of the top programs, not just in Mobile but statewide. But that's a program that struggled a little bit lately, particularly since Ron Lee left as head coach. So that one will be an interesting one to watch. You know, Daphne moves up, but that's the only school in that region that's won a playoff game in the last 4 years. So I think Daphne immediately, even though they're moving up, I think Daphne immediately becomes a team with an opportunity to win that region, which, you know, on its face seems a little strange when the Trojans didn't make the playoffs, broke that long playoff run, that streak that they had. But, you know, Daphne didn't make the playoffs in 6A last year, and I'm saying they could be the favorite in that 7A region. It sounds strange to say it out loud, but I think that, you know, that is the reality.
Hey, Josh, we got to get out of here, but we want to thank you for spending an hour with us this morning, and, boy, it was good stuff. Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Merry Christmas, Josh. Thank you.
Merry Christmas to you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Take care, and thank you for all you do for all high school sports in the state of Alabama. We'll be back with more PSR right here on FM Talk 106.5 and Radio Alabama. AMCO.
Is that you, Santa Claus? Gifts I'm preparing for some Christmas sharing, but I pause because hang in my stocking.
All right, welcome back to PSR.
Is that you?
Merry Christmas to each and every one of you out there this morning. Thank you for being a part of our show. We just hope that you have a blessed, blessed Christmas holiday season and you're able to spend it with your loved ones. And as we say all the time, remember there's a lot of people out there who are hurting, and hurting for a lot of different reasons. Anytime you get a chance to lay out a hand and help one that's hurting, hope that you'll do that. So many of you do. And, you know, I think Christmas kind of changes for us guys when your children are grown and adults, and it kind of changes the whole perimeter of the outlook of everything. But at the same time, it's still all about the birth of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And I hope and pray that that yours is blessed and that you're able to spend it with those that you love. Corey, we got a couple of really big high school basketball tournaments going on during the Christmas holidays, and I know there's a huge one in Birmingham that has been a perennial site for a lot of teams, but down here on the Gulf Coast, we have a really neat one coming up the day after Christmas.
We do, and I tell you what, if you want to go ahead and see some great girls high school basketball action, make sure you go to Bishop State Community College this evening at 4:30. The Williamson Lions will be taking on Pensacola at 4:30. The Vigor Lady Wolves will be taking on Pine Forest. And BC Rain will be taking on Blount. That's all girls basketball action at Bishop State Community College. Congratulations to Elsie Harris from BC Rain. She scored her 1,500th. Career point, high school point last night, as they've had a 3-day tournament going on at Bishop State. And again, it concludes this evening at 4:30, Williamson versus Pensacola, Vigor versus Pine Forest at 6, and at 7:30, BC Rain versus Blount. Now, speaking about that Christmas tournament that's coming after Christmas, you really want to come out and support this tournament. It's the Gulf Coast Holiday Classic, and it doesn't get any better than that. You're going to have 10 local teams starting on day one, December 26th at Spring Hill College. At 9 a.m., you'll have Blount versus MGM. At 10:30, you'll have Fairhope versus Faith Academy. At noon, you'll have Murphy versus Pensacola. All right, Pensacola out of Florida. At 1:30, you'll have Theodore versus Crescent City, Louisiana. At 3 o'clock, Vigor versus Robert E. Lee. That's a showdown you definitely don't want to miss at 3 o'clock. 4:30, LaFleur takes on St. Martin out of Mississippi. At 6 o'clock, Williamson will be playing Booker T. Washington out of Florida. And at 7:30, On day one, December 26th, which is Thursday, McGill Tulane will be taking on Greenville. You have 10 local teams, and again, this is the Gulf Coast Holiday Classic, and it's going to be held at Spring Hill College December 26th, 27th, and day three will be on December 30th. All right, that's a 3-day tournament, the 26th, 27th, and 30th. You don't want to miss any of this Gulf Coast Holiday Classic action. Some great and future stars will be coming down here to play.
Had a chance on Thursday night to go over to St. Paul's gym and watch a tremendous high school basketball game in a packed gym there on the campus of St. Paul's, and came down to the last shot, to be honest with you. UMS prevailed 62-61. VMI commit Trey Bonham made two free throws with 9 seconds remaining, and boy, what a game it was. I mean, the rafters were, I mean, it was just swinging back and forth in there, and the gym was packed, and it was just a great high school game between two rivals on Old Shell Road. And I'm going to tell you, Corey, Trey Bonham is on a different level from just about every player I've seen in Mobile. I mean, he is wall to wall. He goes, I mean, he takes the ball 90 feet, 84 if you want to be specific, but he takes it 84, and he's something special.
Another really record, special. Rick. I mean, yeah. He is UMS Wright's all-time leading scorer, boys or girls.
Right.
I mean, and that's very impressive. He surpassed Brooke Beard to have the all-time leading scoring title in UMS Wright history. And again, a young man, if you have not had an opportunity to see him play, Trey Bonham is making some noise. And, you know, we have the basketball rankings to come out. Congratulations to the Williamson High School Lions. They're ranked number one in Class 4A in that poll, and no surprise, it's Class 7A boys. Mountain Brook's right there at the top. McGill Tulane's at 4. Lee Montgomery, who will be coming here, they're at 3. They just upset May Jemison, who was previously undefeated. They were number one in Class 6A. So you have a team that is ranked in the top 3 in Class 7A, nipping at the heels of Mountain Brook. They'll be coming down here, and you'll possibly be able to see them play McGill or some other schools. They're going to open up with Vigor. So again, congratulations to all those teams. You look in Class 5A, not a lot of action here locally in the Class 5A boys polls, but 4A, again, Williamson's ranked number one. UMS was ranked number 7. You look down in 3A, Mobile Christian's boys come in at number 7, and then we don't have any local teams in 2A or 1A ranked in the top 10 in boys. So just a lot of great high school boys and girls action going on during this holiday season. Have to be excited about that. Go out and support high school athletics, especially high school basketball, during the holiday season, Rick.
It's kind of neat to see what Cedric Yelding has done. Cedric, of course, tremendous high school basketball player for his dad, Bailey, at Fairhope High School, and then went on and played for Ronnie Air at South Alabama. Did a tremendous job there. But Cedric has started the Bailey Yelding Classic at Daphne High School, and I think last night wound it up with Daphne and Baldwin County playing the late game. But golly, you think about Bailey Yelding and all he did for high school basketball in this area and between Mobile and Baldwin counties, and I'm telling you, he is it's great to see Bailey Yelding's name honored and his memory brought back to us with the Bailey Yelding Classic there on the campus of Daphne High School. What an amazing man he was. Coached for many years, administrator at Fairhope High School, and later served as the mayor of Daphne and did just an amazing job in that community. So that's a neat thing. And you look around, and I know that Philip Murphy's got a heck of a basketball team, I'm sure, over at at McGill, and look forward to kind of watching them play a little bit this year too. And it's that time of year. It's just that time of year. So we'll keep you posted. Corey will keep you posted on just about everything that we've got going on in high school basketball. I'm really excited that we are going to get the chance to talk with John Garcia Jr. coming up in the next segment, because he is on the cutting edge of everything that's going on in recruiting. And to be honest with you, I really do want to ask him about the young man that we talk about a lot on here, Will Breland. from UMS Wright, just to see if he's on his perimeter, if he's got him on his scope to see what might be going on with Will Breland. So lots of things going on in high school sports in our area right now.
I agree with it, and I know we have probably about 2 minutes before we close this segment, and I know John Garcia Jr. is on the line with us, and we'll hold him for a short segment before we go in depth
right.
to our recruiting process. And I know John Garcia Jr. took a new job, and I'll let him tell us all about. He left 247 Sports and 24/7 Sports, and now is affiliated with something I grew up reading a lot of, Sports Illustrated. And I'll introduce John Garcia Jr. to our listening audience now. And John, good morning, and thank you for joining us this morning on the Prep Sports Report.
Good morning, fellas. Always good to be on with you.
John, you have you've switched companies and taken a great job, and we're so excited for you. It's got to be something that is really really hit home with you, because it's a great group of people to work for and to work with, and so we're excited for you, pal.
I really appreciate it. Yeah, it's I get to do what I've been doing at a larger scale, and obviously with the resources and backing of Sports Illustrated going into the recruiting game, really for the first time. It's kind of the best of both worlds, and this past signing day, we were up in New York at their headquarters, just covering everything, wall to wall. So it was really kind of surreal, but it was busy at the same time. So I'm kind of glad it's over to some degree.
I understand that. You'll have an opportunity to rest and reload and get ready for that February signing day, because there were still plenty of athletes who remain uncommitted. And I know that we'll talk to you here coming in the next break. We have about 30 seconds before we go to our next break. So coming out into the next segment, we're going to talk about all the local All-Americans, SI All-Americans that we had, the Alabama All-Americans, the Auburn All-Americans, and where these athletes will be traveling and going. John Garcia Jr., the recruiting guru for high school athletics, joining us this morning on the Prep Sports Report. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I've brought some corn for popping. The lights are turned way down low.
Hi, welcome back to PSR in Radio Alabama. Of course, recruiting's been on a lot of people's minds, and of course, Wednesday was the early signing period commitment day. And lots of locals, and a lot of locals brought some national attention across both lines, Alabama, Mississippi. And of course, Corey and I covered the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star Game for the Alabama High School Athletic Association Radio Network, and got a chance to see some really outstanding football players. And we could not be happier to talk with anybody in America about these high school football players than John Garcia Jr., who now works for Sports Illustrated. And, John, good morning. And, again, Corey and I did have the opportunity to call that game, and a couple of guys really caught our eye, especially two guys from Mississippi, McKinley Jackson out of George County, a big nose tackle that dominated the interior line of scrimmage for Mississippi, and then J.J. Peggs from Oxford, right there, right in Lane Kiffin's backyard. And kind of wanted to get your perspective on these two guys. I know that Peggs has signed with Auburn, and McKinley Jackson, he's still holding out. So kind of give us a rundown on those two guys.
Yeah, J.J. off the board to Auburn was one of the reasons that Auburn was considered a big winner on signing day. I think, when we rank classes and we look at the entire cycle, it's like two different situations. One is the overall body of work, the overall class, and those are the traditional rankings. But in terms of when you get to signing day, the schools that really push that day and truly add to their roster, those are the teams that win signing day. And Auburn won three or four really great battles down in the SEC, ACC area, and obviously J.J. Peggs was one of the biggest ones that it won. I actually got a call from Corey after the Alabama-Mississippi All-Star game just telling me how impressed he was with the athleticism J.J. possesses at like 6'3", 280. He was playing running back, tight end. He does a little bit of everything. I know Gus Malzahn said he thinks he could be an offensive guy, maybe a tight end. I don't know. I just think in the SEC with that athleticism, it's going to end up on the D-line, but he's one of those kids where either way, it's a good problem to have. He's one of those that you get him on the roster and you kind of go from there. And obviously, talent acquisition's such a big part of the game, and Auburn's checked that box already, so they'll figure out the rest a little bit later. And then McKinley Jackson, this is going to be one of the headlining recruits nationally, with the early signing period now behind us. He was always planning on signing in February. He only took a couple visits. He wants to take several more, which he'll line up in January. And basically, the entire SEC West is going back and forth for this one. Alabama, Auburn, LSU, the conventional favorites just because of their status in the SEC West. But he's a Mississippi kid, so Ole Miss, Mississippi State are going to be involved. Texas A&M is going to get a January official visit. And then one of the wrinkles could be Georgia. Matt Luke, the Ole Miss head coach who was let go, was really tight with McKinley. They're both South Mississippi guys, and now he's at Georgia. So I think Georgia could be sort of the SEC East team to beat, if you will, for McKinley. But obviously, if we're talking 5, 6, 7 teams involved, there's a long way to go in this recruitment, even though there's only 6 weeks or so between now and the traditional signing day. So that's going to be one of the battleground wars in the South. He plays a priority position at defensive tackle. He is trending up. His senior year and his postseason has been his best football. And he was already known 2-3 years ago. So that tells you how coveted he is has always been strong. And now it's going to be that much more. One, because he's still available, and two, because he's still getting better, and that's the key, I think, when you talk about guys who are going to make an impact as a freshman. And I think McKinley is one of those type guys.
In your inaugural SI All-American team, 4 Alabama football commits were included. 3 were in-state football players, and none better than DeMoy Kennedy right here in Theodore, Alabama, rated the state's number 1 overall player. Talk to me what you saw about DeMoy. DeMoy is going to be an early enrollee for Nick Saban as well.
Yeah, that's, even though that's the trend and sort of the expectation with the elite kids, enrolling early is still a very, very big deal. So that's good for Des Moines and certainly Alabama. But yeah, he was a tough pick because the linebacker crew in this cycle is really good. I think linebacker, quarterback, wide receiver, D-line, those are sort of the positions that have the most depth at the top nationally this year. So Des Moines held off some really good prospects to make this team, but I just think when you talk about the junior year he completed, when he was fully healthy, 100-plus tackles, over a dozen sacks as an occasional pass rusher, just super productive. But then this year, playing offense, special teams, returning kicks, you got to see the true playmaking ability of Des Moines, and we all know he can run and hit like few others in the country. So when you put the whole thing together, he's just one of the best in America, regardless of position. So he was kind of, once you actually looked at it and took everything, if you just focused on the film, he was really hard to keep off of this list. So obviously we didn't do it. And he's sort of our crazy guy in the middle of this SI All-American team. He just has all of the qualities you want. 6'2", 220, runs like the wind, hits like a ton of bricks, but still has room to get better. And that's what you want. You want guys who are trending up but still have another notch or two to achieve at the next level. And I think that he will certainly have that opportunity enrolling next month at Alabama. Reminds me a little bit, if Alabama fans are listening, reminds me athletically of Rashawn Evans coming out of high school. Just that compact package but still has room to fill out and could one day be the captain of the defense like Rashawn was in Tuscaloosa before being a first-round draft pick. I think Des Moines is in that same sort of athletic category, so we'll see if he kind of goes on that same path once he gets to Tuscaloosa.
We're talking to John Garcia, Jr. of Sports Illustrated. And, John, Nick Saban, very rarely makes interesting, positive comments about a future player. I mean, he just simply mentions his name. He doesn't. He's very, very, very conservative when it comes to talking about prospects that they've signed. But he did come out and was kind of giddy a little bit about Bryce Young out of Maitre D', out of California, the quarterback there, who obviously is an outstanding player. If you watch film on him, you see all the great things that he can do. Talk just a little bit about what your vision of Bryce Young is, and is he a guy that can walk in and walk on campus in Tuscaloosa and right off the bat be considered for the starting job?
Yes. In this day and age, that's what you want in a quarterback, in a high-profile marquee type of quarterback. We're seeing more and more freshmen at that position making an impact. And Bryce has a lot of the qualities that those guys did coming out of high school. So one, obviously, arm talent, right? That right arm is as quick of a trigger as any quarterback in the last few cycles. He's not the biggest guy in the world, but he throws it with that three-quarter delivery point, so he does maximize the frame that he does have. He can play on the run. He is athletic, can move in the pocket, evade defenders. And he's really smart. I think that's the biggest separator between Bryce and every quarterback in this class. So the arm talent, there's a couple other guys, because it's a great quarterback year, a couple other guys that are probably in the same ballpark as him. C.J. Stroud, who signed with Ohio State, DJ Uiagalelei, who signed with Clemson. There's a good group of guys at the top. But I think in between the ears, you're talking about a four-year high school starter in the state of California, 47-6 as a four-year starter in that great state against Los Angeles area competition, a state champion, a national champion at Modern Day. He gave IMG Academy their first loss in program history with Trey Sanders and Evan Neal and all those great players, Nolan Smith. On that roster, Bryce is the reason they lost for the first time ever. But more importantly than all of those things, this year at Modern Day, which for those who don't know, is basically the Hoover of California football. It is a big deal out there. It is the program. He called more than half the plays for Modern Day in the huddle. And get this, guys, he adjusted another 20% at the line of scrimmage, not only audibling the play, but he's calling out protections. He's calling out every guy's responsibility on that offense on the fly at times. So I think when you talk about that element, I don't know if Alabama's brought in a guy intellectually as advanced as Bryce Young as a new age spread quarterback. And when you think about that combined with the fact that Steve Sarkisian's offense is almost a mirror image of what Modern Day is doing, the terminology is similar, the pace is similar, the style is similar. That's why Bryce picked Alabama, and I think that's why Bryce, once he enrolls, you know, the first week of January, will be a major factor for that quarterback job. Day one, week one, practice one, whatever one you want to throw in there, he's going to be, you know, a force to be reckoned with immediately. And that's part of the reason why he picked Alabama as well. And that's obviously part of the reason why Nick Saban is so excited. He should be. I mean, his coach called him the best quarterback in modern day history. In modern day,
hey John, again, we're, John, we don't know. John, we're on, John, yeah. We're on a hard break. We got to get out of here. We'll be right back with John Garcia Jr. of Sports Illustrated talking more recruiting. Merry Christmas to each and every one of you in our PSR listening audience and Radio Alabama. Talking to John Garcia Jr. of Sports Illustrated. And John, I'll take a long look at 24/7 ranking. You worked with them for a long time, and I still look at them, and they've ranked Clemson as had the number one class in the United States. And I wanted to ask you about a player that I think Dabo really thought that they had a good shot to get, but Jordan Burch out of Columbia, South Carolina, right there in the backyard of Will Muschamp and the Gamecocks. He committed to South Carolina, but he did not sign. What's going on with that, Jordan? With Jordan Birch, John?
Yeah. Certainly, you know, the two biggest, I guess, movements on signing day were, one, Rakim Jarrett flipping from LSU to Maryland, the wide receiver, which, you know, nobody expected. And then Jordan Birch, the biggest unknown and the biggest target probably on the board, period, on signing day. You know, it was like all the power programs were in on this kid, and South Carolina kept him home. So the commitment was a big deal, but what was kind of bizarre is that after he committed, like you said, he didn't sign, and he didn't field questions from the media there. And obviously, everybody was there. ESPN had national TV cameras there. We had guys on the ground there, 24/7 Rivals. Everybody had someone on the ground there because this was the biggest, you know, planned verbal commitment of the day. You know, a top five player in the country, maybe the best player in the country, in pass rusher Jordan Birch. So he signs, or he commits, doesn't take questions, and kind of leaves the gym. And that was kind of it. And it was like, okay, well, maybe he'll just sign the next day, which would have been Thursday. Thursday comes and goes, nothing. Okay, well, Friday's the last day of the early signing period. Maybe he was just, you know, trying to figure things out. But obviously, he didn't sign at that point either. So now, all of a sudden, despite, you know, Will Muschamp saying that he's not worried about any of his commitments not signing, you know, Jordan Birch is still technically out there. So I think that could be something to, you know, to contest with down the stretch. Will it matter? I don't know. But if that type of prospect is available, those finalists, including Clemson, Alabama, LSU, and Georgia, which probably had the most buzz on signing day for Birch, I think that was becoming my expectation before he announced for South Carolina. Now all of those schools will have to circle back and see if they can make a run at this kid, another legitimate run at this kid. So how he handles his recruitment will be very interesting going forward. Again, he didn't. Usually when you make your decision, it's easy to speak to reporters, even if you don't like to do so beforehand, because now it's done, right? It's pretty cut and dry. I'm staying home. I'm going to play for Will Muschamp. But when he doesn't do that, it's always sort of a red flag in this industry, because you start to ask why, and you wonder if there isn't a finality to this recruitment that was anticipated. So as long as that LOI is not in, it will be a big deal. And now that the week has passed us by, he's got to wait several weeks before he can sign. So I would believe that everybody would try to see if they can make a run at him, whether he's solid or not.
Coaches who are going to make a run here is Lane Kiffin trying to go ahead and get Chris Abrams Drain to sign, the young wide receiver, quarterback, athlete from Spanish Ford, and he'll be signing in February. So I know the Lane train made a stop in Mobile, Alabama, and picked up wide receiver, tight end DJ Thomas, and also Davidson defensive end Cedric Johnson are now Ole Miss Rebels. But, you know, Chris Abrams Drain is going to be one of those guys that I know you're going to keep a keen eye on moving forward in February as well.
Absolutely. What a unique situation, a unique athlete, right? Probably should win Mr. Football after his senior year, moving to quarterback and really riding the ship in what is probably the toughest region, at least optically from where I sit, in the state of Alabama. Him getting Spanish Fort to the playoffs and to the state championship, for that matter, was an unbelievable feat compared to what SF was early in the season and how strong that region was early in the season. But you're talking about a dynamic athlete, maybe the quickest prospect in Alabama, just 0 to 60, change of direction, all of those things that make him a national target. So he'll be a coveted recruit. Like you said, Ole Miss will be involved. He was a one-time LSU commitment. They lost two wide receivers on signing day. I think they could be back involved. Tennessee was a favorite for him at one point of the process. So those are the three SEC teams I'm looking at. But I think some non-SEC teams can get involved too. Robbie Ashford, the state's top quarterback, went to Oregon. And I think that connection and friendship those two have is going to make Oregon more of an intriguing option if they have a spot in February for him. So Abrams Jane will have a busy few weeks as a recruit. And not to mention, he's coming off of ACL surgery. So he's got rehab ahead of him and kind of the, you know, the desire to get right all at the same time. So This busy year for Abram Strain is still ongoing, and you root for kids like that. You know, you hate to see him get hurt, but you know he's talented enough where these schools are still going to want him. So that'll be one of the more intriguing recruitments in the South, and a kid that, you know, he's been a name for us in this industry for 4 years. So you always want to see how those kids end up when they're at such a high level so early in their development.
You know, you talked about Robbie Ashford. Of course, he decommitted to from Ole Miss, and then he comes out and signs with Oregon. I don't know if he'll ever play college football, because he is such a tremendous baseball player that I think that he will. I think he'll go into major league draft in the first couple of rounds. And so that's I was always puzzled by that, because I think he wanted to play baseball and football at Ole Miss, and I don't know how that would have worked out with Lane Kiffin. Maybe it'll work out at Oregon for him on that. Is that something that you've heard down the road about him being an elite baseball player?
Yeah, absolutely. We've heard that for a long time too. I mean, his name started popping up just when Chris Abrams Strain did as a eighth, ninth grader. And that was always the caveat: big, strong, athletic kid, but really good at baseball. And with football, he's only, you know, he's a quarterback with probably a year and a half of starting experience. He was injured for a big chunk of this year as well. So, yeah, I think the upside is probably easier to see on the diamond. But I think he's going to a situation in Oregon where he's going to be able to play both. That was imperative anywhere he went. But he, you know, he's needing to get healthy as well. He's got, you know, a labrum issue, and when you're a baseball player and a quarterback, that's a really big deal. So with both of these guys, the injuries are big parts of kind of the ups and downs of their recruitment. But Robbie, you know, decommitted from Ole Miss, like you said, and Oregon set up the official visit like the next day, and they were blown away over there in Eugene. So he's taking a chance on Oregon, and I think baseball is going to be a big part of that. Here in the near future. So you wish that he gets healthy, but I know he's excited about football at Oregon. He wants to compete as a quarterback. So that's going to be a really interesting kid to follow, like you said, in both sports, and maybe, you know, at the professional level at least one of the two. So really cool type of prospect to track in Robbie Ashford.
One of the flips that talk about, again, going back to the Alabama Crimson Tide, is you had Royale Williams from Hueytown, the four-star running back, and then late in the signing day, Jace McClellan, the running back from Texas, decides to go ahead and join a crowded Alabama running back field, with Trey Sanders not being able to play this year due to his injury. Talk about the flip of getting Jace McClellan.
Yeah, a nice feather in the cap for Alabama to end signing day. Just the other day, McClellan was committed to Oklahoma for 2 years, and that's where it's kind of crazy. You usually don't flip a kid from a national power who grew up in that region. He's a Texas kid who was committed for 2 years. It just doesn't happen. So it just, again, every now and then, when you think Alabama might be down or a little bit of a trend in the other direction, they sort of flex their national power, and that was certainly one of those moves. And I think it's an important move. You know, Jace McClellan is a new age running back, a space running back. You could throw it to him on the perimeter, get him involved in the screen game, and he could give you some chunk plays. And I think that's the biggest difference between he and the two other running backs Alabama has. I think Roydell Williams, the top running back in Alabama, more of a conventional, balanced running back, sort of a downhill workhorse. And then I think McClellan is a complement to that, a guy who's maybe your what we used to think of as a third down back. I think he has some of those qualities. And we know, as Alabama continues to spread this thing out in the new age of offensive football, those running backs are going to be very valuable. It's almost essential to run in those offenses. Look what LSU did with Clyde Edwards-Helaire this year. He was a huge reason why they're the number one team headed into the playoff. And I think McClellan has some of those same qualities, in that he can beat you as a runner and receiver, and that's very important.
John, we got about a minute and a half to go here. One last thing on the Auburn front. Do you think that Chad Morris makes a huge difference in Gus's recruiting? Because for years, Chad was known as a heck of a recruiter, especially bringing kids in from Texas into that Clemson program.
Absolutely. And now the pressure's off of Chad, as we all know, being the OC at Auburn. It's going to be a really interesting situation to watch between he and Gus. They're buddies, man. They've been they've been doing this together and talking together forever. The moment he let go from Arkansas, I said, well, might as well let the Chad Morris to Auburn talk begin because this thing's probably going to happen. It was a no-brainer. And I think when you're a coach and you're comfortable and familiar with your surroundings and you're already known as a great recruiter, you're only enhancing all of those abilities. And remember, Chad will be an OC, so his target pool will be a smaller group of kids. When he's the head coach, he's got to touch base with, you know, 100 kids. When he's the OC, it's just the quarterback and the top priority. So I think he could be that much better, and it'll be a big deal for Auburn.
Hey, John Garcia Jr., thank you so much for spending time with us this morning. We wish you nothing but the merriest of Christmases and happy holidays, pal.
Merry Christmas. So thanks for having me on. Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, many blessings in 2020.
Take care.
Thank you very much, John.
Yep. John Garcia Jr., Sports Illustrated. He's on the cutting edge of recruiting all across this nation. We'll be back with more PSR and the Camp Grace segment coming up right here on Radio Alabama.
This segment of the Prep Sports Report brought to you by Camp Grace. Now back to Coach Rick Cleveland.
Camp Grace is located in West Mobile as the summer home of Camp Rappahoke, Camp Mash, Camp Smile, and Camp Sugar Falls, as well as the home of Outback Mobile and is shared by many other community organizations throughout the Mobile area. Camp Grace is a place where God's love is bestowed freely upon others, the true definition of God's grace. Welcome back to PSR and the Camp Grace segment. During this Christmas season, there seems to be a more evident and fresh feeling of hope in the air. There's extended time with family, presents to give and receive, more gifts and money given to those in need, cheerful music, and so on. Most of us look forward to these things all year. As a coach, I also notice this hope-filled feeling in the teams that I'm around right before each game. Leading up to a game, we've practiced hard and prepared, and now the score is 0-0. We have the hope of playing well and possibly getting a victory. As Christ followers, we have a constant hope that we can lean on and live in regardless of the situation. I was thinking the other day when Peter wrote the book of 1 Peter, he was writing to Jewish believers who were suffering much persecution and difficulty. You can read that in 1 Peter, the first chapter, the sixth verse. Peter reminded them that the Lord had given them a new birth through Jesus Christ and that they were assured of an inheritance kept in heaven for them. He seems to be telling them, you may be going through very tough times, but we have a constant hope that will never die. Because our Lord defeated death, we have too, and we will have a life for eternity that will never fade away. What a hope to live in this Christmas season and beyond. The baby named Jesus, whose birth we celebrate every year, is the child who would later suffer and die on a cross and rise from the dead 3 days later to conquer sin and death on our behalf. Because he died and we can live and be saved from our sins, he is our living hope. Jesus' birth, life, death, and resurrection are what give us something to look forward to beyond this life. When we receive him as our Savior, we are given the best gift ever, eternity with him. What a Lord and what a life. Because of his gift to us, let's share with those who need his love and give them the gift of our God and Father.
Rick, again, Jesus is the reason for the season, and with all the presents and all the family accolades that go along with it, you know, you don't want to lose sight of Jesus being the reason for the season, and just want to take this time to wish everyone a very happy and Merry Christmas. And, you know, you go back and you think about, like you mentioned earlier, Rick, to where when you have little children and you see the excitement that they get being around their family and opening presents, and you see that in your grandchildren as well moving forward, just the family atmosphere, again, without losing sight and focus that Jesus is the reason for the season.
Absolutely, Corey. And you know, one of the things that always hits home with us here around Christmas is we have so many military people in our area. And for whatever reason, and obviously a very valid and good reason, this is a tough time for a lot of military folks that have seen struggle and seen strife and been on the cutting edge of life and death. And I think constantly about this time of year for the hope that these people who have served our great nation, I just pray that there will be a peace that comes to their heart because they have seen so much more than the average person sees and goes through. I have a dear friend who is a widower. He lost his wife a little over a year ago, and I can remember last Christmas, he called me and he just said, I miss her. I miss her so very much. And we have a lot of people out there that have lost loved ones during this past year. Maybe you can pick up the phone and just call them and just say, I'm thinking about you. And, you know, just want you to know that I care. That is such a huge, huge thing for people to hear who have lost loved ones. And there's people out there who are suffering from lots of different problems. And you know them, and we don't. And we know some that you don't. And I hope that you will certainly reach out to those people that are hurting for those reasons as well. But we are so grateful for so many blessings that have been granted to us. And for some of us, it's hard to understand why we get those blessings. But in living a life that is based on the teachings of our Lord and Savior, it gives us the opportunity to know that we have eternal life and an eternal home in heaven. We are coaches. We play games, and those are just games. Unfortunately, sometimes if you don't win, you don't keep a job. But in life, you're a constant winner if you follow the teachings of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. May God bless you during this holiday season. Thank you for being a part of PSR. So many people out there that listen and share with us their shares and concerns, and we are blessed. For Dalt, for Corey, for Mark, and for Philip, we wish you the merriest of Christmases and a happy and blessed new year. And remember this, no matter what you do, no matter where you go, he is always with you. God bless you, and Merry Christmas from PSR.
Of angels, oh, come let us adore him. Oh, come let us adore him. Oh, come let us adore him. The Lord.